First, here's Eddie Mayer.
On Wednesday on Radio 4, the arguments about Afghanistan reframed in a lively debate about this provocative question. Have the Taliban won? Among my guests, a woman who says yes, of course they've won. Afghanistan now is less well-governed than in 2001, and democracy is a dirty word. She is Mariam Abu Zahab, an academic from France. She'll be joined by Peter Galbraith, who was with the UN in Afghanistan, and Graham Lamb, formerly with the British Army. The audience at Chatham House will be on their feet too, joining in. Have the Taliban won the war in Afghanistan? BBC Radio 4 on Wednesday night at 8.
With Eddie Mayer. And during the programme, there'll be a live online debate on the Radio 4 blog. Now, when he's not casting his critical gaze around the nation's art galleries, Brian Sewell is partial to a totally different sort of aesthetic experience, stock car racing. He's a long-term enthusiast. And now on BBC Radio 4, we join him at the trackside for Stock Car Sewell.
I'm thoroughly enjoying this. I've never had the privilege before coming so many hours before the race begins. And it's extraordinary. It's wonderful. There are battered old cars in those extraordinarily vulgar colours here, there and everywhere. Pinks, lavenders. Imagine a pink racing car. None of them's got any windows because that's a safety measure. It's the best form of air conditioning, of course. And there's a car over there with its nose down and its back up, and the wheels are whizzing round, see if they're going straight. And there's a car which doesn't even have an engine at all, being pushed by five people. And there's a huge dip in the middle of the car park. Looks as though it's a lake about a foot deep. And every time anything goes through it, great waves go up. And the smell, oh, that heady smell of the exhaust. I don't believe for one moment there isn't alcohol in it. That's the sort of noise I like.
I've spent many chilly evenings at the Wimbledon Stadium. You can come here for greyhounds and for car boot sales, but on alternate Sundays throughout the winter, it's the London home of stock car racing. When the wind blows in the right direction, I can, from my garden, hear the engines roar, a siren call pulling me down the hill to the oval track. But I've never delved into the guts of the thing, which is what I'm about to do today. So, as my guide, Virgil to my Dante, if you will, I have with me Paul Huggett, writer of the stock car magazine Wheelspin.
Stock car racing started in America, and they'd been at it for several years before we got our first taste in 1954. But because we didn't have the kind of big open dirt tracks that they'd got there, which had been for horse racing, our stadiums were very much smaller. We got the speedway tracks, which perhaps had a dog track around them as well. So partly out of necessity, but also because it was going to be a lot more spectacular, it was decided quite early on that they'd actually allow the cars to hit each other during the course of the racing. And that kind of established a contact racing culture that lives on to this day. The cars became sophisticated. Hot rod racing came along, which is non-contact. But periodically in any sport, you get people wanting to do a back-to-basics approach, and that's where banger racing came in about 1970, roughly. People decide, OK, we get old cars, we take the glass out, we take the upholstery out, they put in a rudimentary roll cage, and full contact racing was back on the agenda. And it's one of the most popular parts of the sport now.
We want to see things burst into flames, and we want to see cars turned over and roll. What's the point of having a roll cage if you don't roll? No.
Definitely a hardcore banger, man, I can see that. Well, there's plenty going on tonight.
When I first started looking, it was all the popular cars of the day, particularly things like Ford Cortinas. And occasionally you'd see something like a big and American competing with these Minnows. And it was astonishing the way something made by Cadillac or Packard or whatever would get his boot knocked off by a Ford Cortina. They literally fell to pieces. This was fun.
Yeah, but I think now the Ford Mondeo is the weapon of choice for many of the national banger boys, so much so that it's actually banned from a lot of meetings because it's an extraordinary strong car. We've seen a Mondeo pick up a Jaguar and take it down the length of the straight, put it in the wall, and...
Oh, do that tonight.
The Mondeo backs off, the Jaguar doesn't. It's quite a tough piece, so they're not allowed. They won't be racing tonight, sadly, though.
One more question. The smell of the exhaust here, it's exactly like being exposed to a vast quantity of evaporating gin for me. I get really sort of heady. What is it? Because it isn't a normal exhaust.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pump fuel, but it does smell a whole lot better in the confines of a racetrack, doesn't it, than when you're stuck on the New Cross Road.
It's different. It's really heady and intoxicating. And I don't find that on the New Cross Road.
I find it slightly worrying. I've been rebreathing this for 40-odd years. But yes, it's better.
Perhaps it is gin.
Maybe. I'll have a double.
Oi!
That's pretty nice.
And in preparation for my big day at the races, I took a conventionally fueled vehicle, in this case a Hertfordshire taxicab, to visit a stock car racing legend.
We're on our way to talk to one of the first people ever to go in for stock car racing in Britain. His name is Pete Ducker, and he lives and breathes motor cars. At the moment, he's breathing the great American monsters. Cadillacs, Buicks, that sort of thing. But all these years ago, in the early 1950s, he was living and breathing the original vehicles that were in first races here, and that's a very different matter. As he deals in American cars, he has an American postbox at his gate, and that's what we're looking for. I wonder if it's that. No, that's a container for dog droppings. Yeah, there's the post box and there's the Cadillac. Oh, I don't know anything about new American cars. So, we are.
Where's the dog?
No, there ain't no dog.
It says beware of the dog on your door.
Oh, yeah, sure it does. That's all the stock car stuff in the world is in that place. Biggest collection in the UK. Go right on in. So as you come getting on this then...
I've never really grown up. I've been in love with motor cars since I was about four.
You're in another Peter Pan like me then.
And well, there's no Tinkerbell in my life.
Yeah. How many years have you been watching it?
About 1975.
Yeah, well, the real
stock car racing was back in the 50s. All them boys drove those cars by the seat of their pants, you know. We had villains there, we had gangsters racing them, we had everything in those days, you know.
Down to earth with a bang, and what a bang, London's New Cross Stadium put on Britain's first stock car race.
All over London, there was notices around the stations. Don't even think of going to New Cross because it's full up.
British, American and French drivers competed in the biggest knock-em-down, drag-em-out roughhouse of the year.
The crowd went wild. They didn't know where to look first because there was cars turning over, there was cars catching light, there was cars hitting the fence. It was mayhem down there.
Well, that's really what you go for. You don't want a demure, well-behaved race. You've gone for sort of blood and circuses.
Oh, sure, yeah.
What did you take onto the track for your very first ride?
I took a 35 slant-back Ford V8, four-door.
That's an American car?
Yeah, but built in Dagenham at the time, you know, a right-hand drive. 1954, I had, whether it's an honour or not, the first stock car to be smashed into the safety fence in this country.
In the earlier days, all the cars were recognisable as things that people actually drove. I always wondered how much tinkering had gone on under the bonnet.
That's what brought the people in to see them, because they might have the self-same car in the car park.
How did you get into stock car racing?
I did set out to be a speedway rider, but when I read in the paper that stock cars were coming to this country, and when I rung up, it was Digger.
Digger Pugh is importing America's newest and wildest sports craze to Britain. Stock car racing. Hundreds of young men and six girls are lining up to take part.
Digger was about 4 foot high. He was running around like a blue-ass fly wherever he went. He had a flash shirt on, a flash pair of strides. I got on well with him. A lot of the boys didn't. He was very forceful. He ruled it with an iron fist. He'd seen it all in the States, you see. He knew what was wanted. So he put on a show, a presentation. And any old riff-raff, he'd get rid of them. He said, you need a crash helmet. I said, Digger, I don't need a crash. What do I want a bloody helmet for? He said, you've got to have one. And I gave my brother-in-law £5 to go down the old Kent Road to buy me a crash helmet. I've still got it down there. It's made of paper mache. No, he was a boxer, he was a speedway rider. Digger done all sorts of things.
Why was he called Digger?
Digger, well, they thought he'd come from Australia, but he didn't. He came from England, really. He was born in England.
Well, I was born in the year that he brought it into England.
De Gopiu's daughter, Janice Bell.
And my mum being pregnant wasn't that involved. In fact, she said she was furious at the time because he'd hocked everything to start it up so she couldn't have a pram. We've got a shot here of Dad looking very American because he was promoting it from America. American cars, American pizzazz, wearing big things. Poor old England was grey because post-war. They were definitely interested in this. And none of his ideas were done for money. They were done because they sounded a really great idea and he wanted to see it going forward. And that's all he did all his life, was set up and move on. Right, this is an album of cuttings from Evening Standards and Daily Mail's World News, but also it's got in it cartoons of the times, not only stock car racing, but of Dad. So it must have been quite a big thing. It must have meant quite a lot to him because of all the hundreds of things he did. I've got nothing of that, you know, but this is the one thing he's kept. So, and look at that, wearing a cowboy hat and a cowboy outfit. These are rare people, aren't they? Aren't they lucky that Dad pulled them all together?
De Gopiu was quite a wild card in the worlds of British circus and variety. Janice performed in the family acts from an early age, though eventually she ran away from the circus to become a teacher. But before Digger moved on to create acts like the trampolining Digger Pew Girls, he ushered in a golden era of British stock car racing.
He said, "I'm opening tracks all over the country." He said, "It's going to be tough, I tell you, so only the tough need apply."
It looks dangerous, it is dangerous. But surprisingly, the men behind the wheel are rarely badly hurt.
It was me, Whiskers Warner, Oily Wells, Jake Jacobs, Freddie the Mad Parson. I was a kid amongst them.
So that group, the Barnstormers?
We opened the stadiums. Yes. Yeah, we put on a show. Going down the straight, three abreast, turning right to go left. Yes. Terrific drivers, some of them guys were. We could come away with £300 to £400 a week.
That was quite a lot of money.
Average wage was about £8 a week then. We used to travel all over the country from track to track. They were definitely the best days of racing.
For the Barnstormers, life off the track could evidently be quite diverting too.
At a time in my life, two boys come down, the Cross Boys from Walthamstow, and they had this lovely bit of crumpet with them. One of the Digger-Pew's trampoline artists. One of them had busted the rat on his car, you see. He didn't have 30 bob, but he did have, as we called, a stock car barrel. So he swapped it for a rat, a radiator. One went off clutching a rat, the other one went off clutching stock car barrel. After a little while, he wanted the gearbox. So what's he do? He swapped barrel for a gearbox for £300. Anyway, the lowest I saw it come down for was a flathead water pump swapped for £500.
We shall never know the ultimate fate of stock car barrel, but Digger died in 1969. Pete gave up racing in the early 60s. The logbooks of some rare and very valuable cars have passed over the desk of his car dealership, which he now runs from the garden office where we chatted, stuffed to the beams with stock car racing memorabilia.
And you, Brian, look out yourself.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
When I first came here in 1975, it was pretty well by accident. I had a godson staying with me, and it was kind of, what shall we do? And the only thing that there seemed to be on anywhere in London was entertaining enough for a teenage boy was stock car racing. So with, I have to say, an air of resignation, I came here and I was hooked. And I don't think much has changed in those years. Coming back here, it's much the same sort of thrill. It's odd because I feel I've been...
And what's at the heart of this thrill? Bits and pieces of ordinary cars made extraordinary by the people who drive them so skillfully. There are many different formulas of stock car at Wimbledon. You will get four of these on a typical race night, but they always include bangers, for they are always on last and they send us home happy. Bangers are at the cheap and cheerful end. Then things get more technical and expensive, like the National Hot Rods, Kevlar-clad hard nuts disguised as family saloons, and the mighty V8 engine, what Pete Tucker once drove, of course, still at the heart of the most powerful formula today, the V8 stock car. Custom-built, very expensive, looking like an entrant for the wacky races with its long, low bonnet and tiny, tiny cab.
this kind of glorious noise that any V8 engines make. I find it quite seductive. It's sort of almost growling away in an orchestra. Wonderful. That looks like a cross between scaffolding and Meccano. Not much elbow room.
No, not a lot of room inside. There's nothing there that you can move. Yeah.
Standing out in the open right next to the track is thrilling, but deafeningly loud. So, for the moment, it's up to the glass-fronted viewing terrace. I've been coming for years, but I've never been interested in the arcane details of racing rules and protocol. On this evening, I arrived at a slightly baffling point.
Complete restart.
At which a hot rod race had come to a sudden pause.
But what's going on now? Completely above my head. The race started. Everything went perhaps one whole lap. And then the race marshal was waving his red flag frantically and it all stopped. A dozen cars have been disqualified, but how they could all have been involved in the same accident, I don't understand. And the order in which things are on the grid has been changed.
This gives you a chance to see the order of these cars, because once they're going at race speed, only the lap scorer knows what the dickens is going on. I don't.
I'm so glad he doesn't know what's going on.
Okay, ready to resume racing with the green.
The man who runs the whole show, race marshal Andy Copper.
You're the grey eminence behind all this.
I am. I'm the law, if you want to put it like that. Yeah.
And he's...
He's the flag marshal, known as Mr. Starter.
Mr. Starter. Yeah. He's very dramatic.
Oh, yes.
Are they always dramatic like that?
If they're good.
He looks as though he could conduct an orchestra.
Yeah, I think he could, yeah.
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 What happened with that...
Apparently, the banger racing is rather looked down on by drivers of more evolved formulas of stock car. They dislike the wanton destruction. But for me, that's the real thrill. In fact, the ultimate race for me is the Demolition Derby, sadly not on this evening's programme, where it really is a case of the last man standing or the last car running. And even if bangers are the poor cousins, there's still real mechanical ingenuity at play.
But the banger boys, it's still pretty much a case of you get an old car.
Paul Huggett.
Sort it out yourself, and in these days there's so many electronics on board, half of that has to be disabled, the other half has to be rerouted, and they know which bits to hit and which bits to not, and there are actually some pretty good drivers amongst them.
You say they know which bits to hit. They certainly do. I was one evening I was down here, and somebody who was racing got very badly dented and said to me, would you get in this car and drive in a dead straight line at that car, hit it amidships precisely. And why? Well, because it's curving like a banana and I have to straighten it out. So I did exactly what I was told to do. And it raced in another race later on. He knew exactly what to do. Banger drivers tend to be mechanics, people in the motor trade with easy access to cars heading for the scrap heap and so on. Like George Heath, whom I found tinkering away, spanner in hand.
When you buy the car, you sort of have to lie to the owners. A lot of them are very possessive about what happens to them. When you say, oh, they're about to go and smash the pieces, they're like, oh, we can't sell you the car. They try not selling it to you.
But this is a Ford Escort.
No, Rover 216.
It's been denatured and is unrecognisable.
Yeah.
So it's got the old Rover engine in it.
No, Honda engine.
It was a very good engine.
Yeah, yes. Very good.
All the doors have been stripped. There are no door linings, no pockets, no back seat, no anything.
No.
You can see the well where the spare wheel used to be and so on and so on. But
the only thing left out of the standard car is the chair and the steering wheel. That is about it. I might give you a gear stick, but even that's modified so I don't lose gears.
There's nothing. Did you choose the colour scheme?
Yeah.
It's a red roof and a blue body.
Yeah.
How much do we spend on this?
Once you've got the cage, the truck, all the gear, just doing the meetings don't cost much, but getting everything to start with costs the thousands, and then just the week to weeks is tens or nothing. So we do have to pay to race, though, which is a downside.
Really?
Yeah.
How much?
So I've had to pay £12 today.
Did the government's decision to give people, 2,000 scrappage,
make it us big?
did it?
Yeah, a lot. All the cars that we would be buying to use just aren't there. They've gone. You can't go down and ask them to hook them out of the scrapyard because they won't give it to you. So it's lost. It's cost us a lot of cars.
Well, that's a great trade. One of the unforeseen circumstances of a rash decision, I think. Yeah. The bangers last to the very end. It means everybody goes away feeling really sort of thrilled and satisfied and pleased. And they've had a bloody good evening and that's, you know, whoopee. What sort of speeds do you get up to in the track?
A track of this size, perhaps 45, 50 maybe, I don't know. When it's dry, but tonight it won't be nowhere near as fast as that.
No, yeah. What's it like driving in these wrecks when the track is wet?
Very exciting, to say the least. It's not as predictable as you could imagine. No. When you think like when you go fast on the road in a bit of wet and nothing really happens, when you're out there actually trying to drive it fast and you just get total wheel spin, the car does not go and you've got 30 others behind you,
so
it is slightly exciting.
Time.
Yes, I think you may be.
Good. Thanks very much. I wish you luck this evening.
Oh, I might need it.
Well, red and blue and I look out for you. This is a winter sport. They close it down in the summer. But you come here in winter when it's dark and you've got the lights on in the circuit and it has that patchy effect. And the exhaust builds up and it's quite thick at one end where everybody slows down and has to accelerate to get around the rather tight circuit. That, catching the light, and then occasionally when you get the exhaust, it's actually spitting flames out. It does seem like a Turner sunset in November. Quite, you know, beautiful. In terms of realism, I wish some painters of a figurative bent would actually come and look at this, because I find it beautiful. But it has a kind of bright vulgarity about it in terms of the colour. And, oh, can you smell the fish? There is a fish stall somewhere nearby. Look. Ah, it's formidable. Stinking fish and these exhausts. It's overwhelming.
Perhaps it's not quite as glamorous as those glory days of stock car racing.
Oh, yeah, it was a big thing.
Pete Tucker.
The fastest growing sport in the country. They all come round here. Oh, Bernard Braden, Barbara Kelly, Freddie Mills, Jack Solomons, Jane Seymour, Sabrina, Charlie Drake, Benny Hill.
That's extraordinary, because you've just run off a list of people who embodied everything that the 50s and 60s were about.
You're right. Dinah Dawes used to come down to Staines. What a sport she was. And they reckon I'd done this dance with her. Like you said, what's that other bloody dance?
Samba.
No.
Cha-cha-cha.
No.
Twist.
No.
Quickstep. Foxtrot.
Tango.
Tango.
Tango. That's it. But I must have had a few because I couldn't remember it.
Well.
In those days, the mid to late 50s, stock car racing attracted huge crowds. There was sponsorship, film stars opened the races, and there were women drivers, like the inimitable Tanya Crouch, a surgeon's daughter from Sussex.
Her job in the first place was blowing tree stumps out the ground. That was her job. And old Bentley came up alongside me. Who was sitting in it? Tanya Crouch. So I said, what are you going to do then? Oh, she said, I'm going to be a stock car driver. I said, you can't even drive on the road, you women. She had a plum in her mouth, you know. Oh, don't you believe it, she said. Don't you believe it. I mean, I had to eat my words afterwards because she was a heck of a driver.
Haringey Stadium and international stock car racing.
Yeah, I used to race with her all over the place. Yes, we used to have a good laugh.
As if we men watching this couldn't have guessed, one of the heats was won by a woman driver.
She'd drink and drink and everything else in the bar. And she had a 34 Ford. Advertising for a Bandbox shampoo. It was white with pink stripes all over it.
And when you think what the H-bomb will do, why shouldn't we break up a few things first?
Tanya Crouch was the best woman stock car driver of the lot.
Tanya Crouch died a few years ago. She was a true motoring pioneer. It's certainly a male-dominated sport, but there have always been a fair number of women on the stock car racing circuit. Like this modern-day Tanya Crouch, a banger driver called Heather.
When you began racing, did you have any trouble with men?
No, definitely not.
Good, I'm very glad to hear it. How long have you been doing it?
I've been racing since I've been 17.
Dare I ask how old you are?
46.
You don't look it. On that score, I would recommend it to all women. And you go all around the country,
yes,
as well
we do,
as women.
Yeah. Wimbledon, Ipswich, Yarmouth, Eastbourne, Northampton last week.
What do you drive when you're just being mother?
A Mondeo. A future banger. Have to keep an eye on it.
One thing that's always intrigued me is the music, if you can call it that. Each car formula has its own signature tune, played over the loudspeaker at the start of their race. Decades-old oddities like Bert Kampfert's Swinging Safari and Iwas Kaiser Bill's Batman, indeed.
When they first came out in the charts, in the case of the Banger record, which is Moldy Old Dough, that was about 1972.
Race commentator Lee Canderton.
And the fans liked it, and it's stuck ever since. They have tried to change the music, and they don't like it. So we keep the same music for the Banger. It helps identify the races.
Time for the final Banger race of the night.
I think they carry a sort of badge of honour. They're deeply scarred and battered and repaired and held together with sticky tape.
Like most men, I've never grown up and I've always been in love with cars.
One with fish written on it. I wonder if that, that was the source of the smell. Cars out of the way and they're free to do what they want.
I've written about cars for many years. I'm fascinated by them, by what they do, by what they represent in society, by how beautiful and aggressive and wonderful they are.
There's an... Ah!
And how nasty.
There's another car facing backwards. It's spun on the track.
They embrace every characteristic of the human male, in my view, rather than the human female.
One car has broken down.
There you are, confronted by something which is pure aggression.
Handbag has had a crack. Handbag is steaming.
I'm in love with cars partly because I see them as works of art, and if not art, then craft and style.
Look, 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 two pink cars together.
I really do, as an art historian, find even these battered beasts of the stock car races fascinating.
The radiator's obviously lost all its water, and the car has no windscreen, so the driver has had all that boiling water in his face. Oh!
Wimbledon now, alas, looks a bit down at heel, as though somebody might take it over and build on it.
The offside rear wheel is likely to come off, I should think, at that angle.
George Heath in 641.
So we picked a good one with our friend George Heath.
George has done rather well.
The winner of each race takes the lap of honour in the open-backed safety car. Trophy held aloft like a Roman charioteer.
Everyone is gone, yes. It's, you come out feeling that you've watched Ben-Hur and King Lear and a pantomime all at the same time. And then out you come from the arena into the parking lot. Everybody's packed up and gone away. It's a sort of melancholy note to the end of a great day. Nothing left.
I'll tell you the rules. There aren't any.
Stock Car Sewell was presented by Brian Sewell and produced by Caroline Hughes. It was a Whistledown production for BBC Radio 4. The news is next, and then, as the public spending axe looms, Andrew Ronsley probes with insiders and politicians the role of the Star Chamber, which makes the decisions on who gets what.